Welcome to another episode of Talking Fast, a Gilmore Girls podcast. I'm Suzanne.
And I'm Alexis.
And we're two longtime fans of the show, excited to rewatch and recap it along the way.
This week, we are joined by writer, actor, director, Stan Zimmerman. He is a Writers Guild of America nominated comedy writer, writing for shows like Golden Girls, Roseanne, and our very own Gilmore Girls. Stan's also been busy acting and directing on stage, earning a number of Best Director awards. Recently, he's published a memoir titled The Girls, From Golden to Gilmore, released on February 13th. In it, he talks about falling in love with theater as a child, meeting his writing partner, Jim Berg, writing for hit shows and movies, and returning to theater. We're really excited to have him here to talk about this book and his time writing for shows we love. Thank you for joining us and welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. I'm glad to be here.
So as you might expect, our questions kind of are mostly about Gilmore Girls, although it's just a small section of your book. And yes, you're sporting the Gilmore Girls merch, which we love.
I have so much. I have to tell you, I've been to all of the fan fest, and my job is to get you two to go because you will meet the best people. And the people, they started out as fans, but they became family to me. And I can't thank them enough. I decided, it's one of the, maybe the second one, I talked about this idea I had for a book.
Ooh. Perfect.
Beautiful book.
And I mentioned the title, and everyone got very excited. And then every year they would say to me, so where's the book? Come on, hurry up, Stan. So the Gilmore fans were kind of my accountability coaches, and they kept going and really encouraged me. And, you know, because there's, when you write, there's, you know, ups and downs. And And it was really hard.
I'm working on my dissertation now. So like when people are like, where is
ups
it? I'm
downs.
Like, I'm working on it.
That's where coffee comes in. Coffee.
Oh, yeah.
And so I really thank everybody for, I mean, they did it in a very sweet way, but there, you know, there was a little bit of, we're waiting anxiously.
Yeah.
And then I specifically announced that books were on sale as of at the last festival in Agunquit, Maine. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people ordered them. And I had bookmarks made because, you know, books and Rory, they all go together.
Yeah.
And, but really, the group of people I met have been so wonderful. And there was a group of like five or six women that follow me around a little bit around the country. When I did the Golden Girls convention in Chicago, they came.
Cool.
When I had a new play world premiering in Dallas last March, a bunch of them came, including the founders of the Fan Fest, Jenny and Marcus Whitaker. And if you don't know them, they are fantastic people. They just started the festival as fans. They had never run anything like this, and they did such a beautiful job. I've done a number of events for different shows that I've worked on. I just have to say they were so impressive, organized, treated us great. It was so very, very, very exciting.
Mm-hmm. That sounds wonderful. We've heard so many great things about the Fan Fest, and like we haven't been, but just as Gilmore Girls content creators, I feel like we've kind of been inducted into the fandom, which is such a wonderful, lovely family that just keeps growing and growing as it gets even more popular somehow 20 years later.
Isn't that wild? I'm sure you saw the New York Times article.
Yeah.
Gilmore Girls was number six of the most watched TV shows of all TV shows in 2023. How is that possible that a show that was done so long ago still is relevant and is riding another crest of popularity? I did see that with Golden Girls. You know, it had an initial big, you know, hit. And then I would go out and young people would come up to me and say, I've watched every episode. I know every word of it. Like, but you were not born when that show was on. And I love seeing it happen with Gilmore Girls. And I love meeting new fans. I love hearing about what the show meant to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a writer, unlike an actor, I'm not recognized. You know, people don't see me and say, oh, he's that writer guy. Writers just, you know, can be invisible. And so when people come up to me and tell me that they watched the show with their mother or the friends they made from it, or what the community means. It is so exciting for a writer to see the lasting effect on a show, but just that they're real people connected to those viewers. You see numbers of how many people watch it, but you don't really get to know each individual story with it and why people connected to it. Like, when did you all, and why did you all connect to that show?
So I began watching Gilmore Girls. I would get home from school, probably like junior high or so, and back when it was still ABC Family, the reruns. So I caught it in bits and pieces, and I'd like rush home to get home in time. And it was the big Netflix boom when I was finally able to watch the whole show, see every single episode in order. And from there, I began, the classic sort of cyclical, yearly, seasonal rewatch that so many people do when like fall hits. It's like, oh, the temperature, the leaves, it's time. And
Let's go to Stars Hollow.
yep, exactly.
Yeah, I watched it a bit when it was still airing, but it was like coming out when I was a teenager and I didn't spend that much time at home watching TV. So I saw episodes here and there, and then yeah, when it came onto Netflix, I just remember like it feeling comforting and nostalgic, even though I hadn't watched it constantly when I was growing up. So it's like kind of a manufactured nostalgia, but I mean, it works for me. So
And who did you relate to in the show?
Rory, definitely.
yeah, I feel like I related to parts of Rory, but as like just being a bookish person and kind of a nerd, but other parts I just like there wasn't any person who was I really identified with. I think maybe Taylor. I like his grumpiness.
Wow,
I
okay.
know.
I
Hopefully
never
I'm
would have
not
guessed
evil
that
like
one.
him.
Okay.
It's always been my aspiration to be a grumpy old man, so
Well, speaking from one, I can tell you it's a lovely place to be in.
And you, as you joined in season five as a writer, you were also sort of joining and did like a rewatch. Well, not a rewatch, you did a whole big watch of your own to prepare. You talked about that in your book. What was, could you talk a little bit about that and the watching it all and like maybe who you connected with or found the most interesting as you had to like kind of acclimate to the show in one weekend, a big watch.
I obviously, as a friend of Amy's, I saw the pilot, and I just thought it was so brilliant the way she created the story, especially the Friday night dinners.
Oh,
For a
yeah.
writer to have that be a part of the show, and you was never forced of why they had to go to those characters' house, the parents. It was part of the drama of it, and it created even more drama. But I hadn't really kept up with it. As a writer, you're developing your own stuff and you have your own life. And I didn't watch a lot of television regularly, but I was taught early on in my television writing career, if you're smart, you'll watch everything at least once so that you know generally what is being produced, what are the hits, what's not working, and why. And I always recommend that when I teach writing classes, just educate yourself, or for my acting, see what the different styles of acting are. Why is Gilmore Girls have a different rhythm to it than other shows? But then when we got the job and they said, oh yeah, it was probably like a Wednesday or Thursday, and they said, yeah, you're starting on Monday. I'm like, what? And back then, it wasn't something you could watch on your computer. They literally came big boxes with, I feel like, DVD with there might have been cassettes even. So I had to get up and put them in the machine. There was no just sitting back and drinking some wine. There was some work involved and some steps. I think I was probably the official first binger. So you have me to thank for that. And I instantly fell in love with the show. It just the rhythm of it, the writing, the acting, the look, the music, everything about it. It pulled me in. And I specifically clued into the mother-daughter-grandmother relationship because I have that similar in my life with my grandmother. and my sister being very close. Well, they were when my grandmother was alive, and my mother, and the complications that you see between mothers and daughters. As a man, I always thought, oh, they're women and they'll all get along all the time. And then you watch those relationships and you go, no, that's just human nature. And especially between mothers, daughters, and granddaughters. And everybody has their own opinion about life. And
Oh, yeah.
so I thought that was really interesting writing. How are they similar? How are they different? And then the whole town and all those characters. There weren't many shows like that. Maybe something like Northern Exposure,
Oh,
where
that's
you
my favorite
thought,
show of all time.
no, of all time, you can't say that to me,
Yeah.
buddy. You could say maybe number two, but not your favorite. Wow, how'd
Yeah.
that hurt?
Sorry.
Whew, I'll have to get over that one. So, I didn't watch Northern Exposure that much. I appreciated it, and I loved that it w had all those weird little characters in that town. So I love that Amy did that in this town, and it was so fun to see actors that I had adored from other shows like Sally Struthers and Liz Torres, not knowing that years later I would become very close with Liz Torres.
Yeah.
I just talked to her the other day, and we have a very special bond.
She seems like a great person that many people have met at those fan fests and adored.
She is well, an encyclopedia of experiences. So I would she lived in the same complex that my mother lived in, and so I got to see her at least once a week. And
Oh,
then
nice.
after my mom passed, I kept visiting her, because when my mom was there and dying in hospice, I ran into Liz, and she just grabbed my arm and she said, "You can't leave me. I don't have anybody," because she doesn't have any children or husband. And so I promised her that I wouldn't. And so I would go back, and then we would spend every Monday together. And the story she had, I would just throw out a name, and she would just go on these great stories, or she would start to tell a story and she couldn't remember anything. And I just would somehow just clued in. I said, that person, I just knew all the people. And it was just fascinating to hear stories of New York theater coming to LA. Musical variety TV shows back in the day, working with Norman Lear and becoming friends with Valerie Harper and working on all the shows, and then her experience on Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, I feel like that's the lovely, almost like a reflection of Gilmore Girls, that we admire the like relationships within the community, Lorelai and Rory, with like Sookie and Miss Patty Babette, all of them. They're like a fa like found family, essentially. There's also so like it's just a lovely relationship you have in real life that kind of co like I don't know seems of theme of the show as well, and how nice to have it in your own life too.
But how great would it be to live in a town where people kind of had your back? I mean, that's just not really, for those of us that live in big cities. I talked to my neighbors a little bit, but they all knew each other's business, which could be good and bad. But they all seemed to really care for each other, and that was really cool to watch that. And then Emily Kuroda, I had written for her years ago on a TV series based on the movie Gung Ho, which was a Ron Howard movie. So that was kind of fun to write for her again. And I kind of knew her on that. The show didn't last that long, but I knew she was a really brilliant actor back then and super funny and smart. So it was really cool to see her in a completely different role.
Yeah. I feel like you've just dropped a million names for us, and it
I
reminds
know. And
me.
I've noticed that. I do read some of the reviews on Amazon, and one or two people go, oh, he just keeps dropping names. But those are people I've worked with. Like, what I can't change their names and say, Martha McGillicuddy. I mean, it's Emily Kuroda, so that's who I know.
I love it. And it reminds me a lot of all the pop culture and name drops in the actual show of the Gilmore Girls that we're like, we in our recap episodes, we pick one of those out each and call it our Rory's bookshelf and either like talk about that reference or research it because a lot of them go over our head. But we were
I'm
wondering
sure you're
what
like
the
Paul Anka. Who is
the
Paul Anka?
dog. At
Well,
least that one we get a cameo.
yeah. But, when I started writing television was made so that it was kind of written so that everybody would know, because it was just mass audiences watching it. And they didn't want anything to have go into somebody's head and they think, I don't know what that is. And they would change the channel. They were afraid of people changing the channel. And I love that what Amy did was she was like, she couldn't give a fuck. Like, if you don't know what it is, look it up. And that kind of coincided with the internet so that people could be watching, you could be on your phone, you could look it up. It was very easy. But it was very frustrating as a writer because you'd have a reference in your scripts and the network or studio would give you a note and say, well, nobody knows who that is. And you'd have to change it, which kind of dumbs the shows down. And Amy changed that vocabulary of TV writing. So whenever we would put something in the script, and they tell you as writers, be specific, that it's you can find humor in the specificity. So we would have some reference and a network executive would say, well, no one knows who that is. And I said, well, we did it on Gilmore Girls, and that seemed to work. So I have often brought up that show as a great example.
How many of those references in Gilmore Girls, like in come from the writer's room versus come from Amy herself? Or is it all just kind of that's a like a melting pot of everybody's references and favorite things and stuff like that that they drop in?
Amy and Dan have a crazy encyclopedia in their head, as do I. Mine is much different. Dan was especially, a real music nerd. He knew everything. And so whenever we'd want some crazy band, it'd be like, go ask Dan. He knows all of that. And that's what's really exciting about putting together a staff of writers. You want people that have different minds. There's no sense in having us all be of the same mind. So I might know more theater references or television, old television. Tap me for that. But there were a lot of music, a lot of movie references, like The Mothman Prophecy. I mean, I don't know where that came from. That was just it was a popular movie at the time and seemed weird. And but then she'll have things like Pop-Tarts and older, kind of food things. It was exciting to put those things in. And sometimes I didn't know what they were. But then, like when we did Norman Mailer, we had a list of, some writers, and I had said, well, I back in the day when I was in New York, I'd cast a play by Norman Mailer. And he had known Marilyn Monroe and wrote a play by Marilyn Monroe. So I had a brief little moment of, being in rooms with him when we were, I mean, I was really super young. And so it was one of the lovely full circle moments to suddenly, he was on set reading my lines.
Yeah, that's cool. I liked your like the many different full circle moments you identify throughout the book where it's just like, oh, life, it's
The whole
cool.
life. Here we go. And but when they happen, you kind of relax and you have a nice sigh of relief, like, okay, here we are. I get it. When you're young, things come up and you go, oh, that's really interesting. But then when they come back around, it's just a nice little closure to it. And it's super cool to see so many of those happen. From like an Emily Kuroda. But then even Liz Torres, I remember I early in my career I wanted to direct sitcoms, and somehow I got to follow the director on a Valerie Harper sitcom called City, and Liz Torres was on the show. And she was nice to me and talked, and I was just there for a few days, but I remember her being, really an interesting person. And then here I am, writing for her, and then now becoming her friend.
Crazy how it always happens.
It feels like somebody's up there kind of,
The director,
orchestrating. Somebody's up there going, that would be interesting. Let's bring that character back in.
Like writer and director,
It's
that's
kind of
awesome.
like the way Amy writes, which is also unique in that in most hour shows and half hour shows, character or story comes up and goes the same episode. And she loves planting seeds in one episode and it'd be a little bit, and then all of a sudden, you know, like you see Logan a little bit, and then all of a sudden we knew where it was going. And that's really cool to you know, plot out the season and then where can we drop them in, you know. Very rarely, you know, sometimes in movies, oh, they meet cute and then suddenly there's a romance, you know, right then and there. But, you know, that's not real life, you know. That's where we all get messed up and end up in therapy, you know, because you see movies and these romance and you expect, you know, the knight in shining armor coming in on a white horse, and that doesn't usually happen that way.
It's almost like she's taking something out of like suspense novels or mystery novels where like you have all those kind of people who pop up in the first 30 pages and then they'll come back towards the end and be like, that was the killer or something like
Yeah.
that. Just making sure that everything's kind of connected by the end.
She borrowed from a lot of genres, you know, because she started in sitcoms, and this doesn't happen usually in our series either, that the scenes end with a little joke or a button. In half hours, you always end it with a joke, and then you hear a little music and you go to the next scene. But in our shows, it's not like that. But in Gilmore Girls, you'll see that, the arc of a scene. And so each scene feels like this little like close, like da-dum, you know. Oh, and then we can go to the next one. So it gives you a little smile at the end, and you feel really good. So she did that. I think she was very influenced by the fast-talking '40s movies of like Rosalind Russell, and I've heard her say that, talk about that, that she wanted that speed in the show.
Yeah, that was one of the things when I first watched the show. I remember watching an episode with my dad, and he just got so flustered, and be like, people don't talk that fast in real
Oh
life.
yes, they do. They really do. And you talk over each other. That's the way real life is, you know. But I think people are used to, you know, and I've worked with some people that have been on soap, and they always have this weird pause, like they're pausing all the, and then they talk, you know, dramatically. And like Amy would never, you know, unless we wrote that in that they pause. It's very rarely in that, and that's really affected me in my theater work and my writing for theater, and especially my directing for theater. I Let's go Gilmore fast, come on. And I love that speed, and especially in theater when you have that rhythm of a play, and then when they stop, you see the audience just like lean in and they listen. And that's so cool. And so I love directing like that.
Yeah, we just had a moment like that. We just finished up season four for Gilmore Girls, and it ends with the like Lorelai just being silent in reaction to Rory and Dean sleeping together, whereas right before that she'd been like spouting off all of the stuff that had been happening at the inn that night, and then she just goes silent and it makes it so much more impactful.
Yes, and I tell that to my acting students. If you do this rhythm all the time, it loses its power. And it's so wonderful when an actor does finally take that moment and you just.
Yeah, on the topic of finishing our recaps of season four, I was excited to talk to you as you joined for season five because we were, it's such like a dramatic season four. Lorelai and Luke finally get together, Rory and Dean have their big moment, and then you're very much wondering like, where is this turn going to go in season five? So I guess what was it like with season five and the storylines and the character arcs and whatnot, as you, I don't know, you might have had opinions as a viewer too of like what you wanted for the characters. So I guess I'm just curious to hear your thoughts about season five in general.
Well, I mean, Rory was going to school, so that was going to be a whole new world. And I won't sing the song for you because I'm not a singer. But we decided early on, because we plotted out months before. So we start in June. We start writing or working on the shows in June. They don't start filming them till August. So you have a good 2 months to really think about it. And so we split the season in half and we concentrate on the first half. And then we had a little retreat and went to Palm Springs, which they paid for. And in past
Nice.
years, they've gone to like Vegas. You think it's nice, and then you get there and you go, Oh no, we're working the entire
Really just
time.
trapped.
Yeah, you're just trapped in a nice city. But you know, there was one meal we got to go out and have martinis. But like, you're working in Palm Springs, and I'm like, I want to be out and look at the mountains and the beautiful century homes. But no, you're down there working. It's like, okay. But it was kind of fun to just kind of go out of, your normal pattern of living in your house. But we all decided that the season would be about relationships breaking apart and coming back together. And I love that. I thought that was super cool. And so there's so many of, Emily and Richard, and I mean, that became a huge part of that season. And so, but it was also really fun see a new love interest for Rory and what that
Oh,
would
yeah.
be. And I know it's probably an unpopular opinion, but I liked Christopher. And I mean, obviously there were things he did in our season with the baby and all that craziness, but what he meant to her before that season, and the father of her child. I mean, that's a big deal. So I like the idea of Logan being kind of the Christopher to Christopher was to Lorelai, that and to be also somebody, when you go away to college, somebody new and different. And that was a very different person. And he needed her. He needed someone to kind of put him in place because he was so privileged and gorgeous.
I am a
They
Team
just
Logan fan as well, like you.
I just thought they look so cute together. They're just, when I cast, I look at that too. Why do people look good together? And they just looked good together. And I like that they both were able to push each other's buttons in a good way. And it was new, but it was also comforting in a way. I think because of Rory's background and her grandparents, and that he was somebody that would fit in so perfectly in their world. Even though he's a little bit of a troublemaker and on boats and things, and the people he hangs out with, the brigade.
Gotta have that for the fun, though.
Yeah, but
It's definitely more of
yeah.
an adult chapter for Rory too, which is fun to watch as like someone who identified with Rory, watching her grow up as I was growing up as well. Like you have different challenges, such as mischievous boyfriends and his friends.
Yes, and that's a big deal when, you go away to college and you're not staying at home, especially with, a single mom, and you're having to carve out your own relationships, and who do you want to be with, and who do you want to be is even bigger. I know when I went to NYU, I was scared shitless and like, how do I get on a subway? And I didn't have my mother to tell me where to go and what to do. I had to figure it out for myself. And it really pushes you to grow up.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and it's so cool. There are so many shows that try to make the high school to college leap, for characters that just don't grasp that, like that change has to happen, and like there are going to be scary moments and stuff like that. So I feel like that Gilmore Girls did that as part of the reason they were successful in taking that leap from going to Chilton to going to Yale and still keep people engaged and people like invested in the characters. That really
Yeah,
helped.
but luckily it wasn't just the Rory show. So you all still had Lorelai and Stars Hollow and those people that you could come back to that were, again, comforting. And yet she had a new journey, and then she could come back and share her new journey with Lane and her old life. And was her life the same? But you can never be the same after having that experience. And that's what it's really like when you go to college. I know when I went to NYU and I'd come back to Detroit, and how was I different? How was I the same? It just gave, for a writer, it gives you just so many avenues to go down and explore. And then, how is she changed and different? And yet, there is Dean or Jess. Luckily, Dean was able to come back and do a couple of episodes.
Yeah, that brings up a question I had for you as a writer. Like, what is something, how do you maintain character consistency throughout like a full season or something like that, while also allowing them to really grow and change in the storylines that you give characters?
Well, I think it's more difficult to keep the consistency from season to season, especially with the shows that I've been on, like Roseanne and Gilmore Girls, where the writers were changing all the time.
Oh,
You do have the consistency of obviously Amy and Dan, but that was one of the reasons why she brought me and Jim onto the show. She just wanted people to get her style, and that she didn't have to explain a lot. And people that she could count on to give good first drafts, and then she could do whatever she wanted to. My complaint about something like Golden Girls is the characters very rarely change. They were kind of the same
Oh,
from the
yeah.
beginning to the end. And if you watch later Golden Girl episodes, and I didn't watch a lot of them, but when I would tune in, I would hear jokes that were similar to that we wrote in season one, but they were just variations on it because back then they wanted kind of what they call evergreen episodes. So episodes that could be played in reruns in any order. You didn't need the arcs of the stories. So that naturally made it so that the characters didn't really change all that much. And that was frustrating as a writer to see how do you live with, three other women and your mother and not change. That's why I loved writing Roseanne, even though it was a very difficult show, and I think we all know why. That on Roseanne, and I hadn't seen that really in a sitcom since the Norman Lear days of it being like real life. There's people died and people grow, people lose jobs, all that happens. And that was really just fascinating to be a part of that storytelling. And then obviously with Gilmore Girls, to follow somebody graduating high school, going to college, the fears and all of that. Luckily, Paris. We're not going to get rid of Paris. And the different roommates you have when you go to college. I had a few interesting ones.
Same here.
Yeah, we've had some fun reflecting on our undergrad college years as we've been watching season four and as we go into season five. Like, it's quite fun to remember those times of our own lives too.
Yeah, all the weird people we met.
Yeah, I had my first roommate would oversleep through his alarm clock.
Oh no.
So then I would have to be the one to like yell and wake him up because for some reason he had all the early classes. I had later classes, but I was up. I got out of that situation and moved to a different dorm. A very close friend of mine that I had just met, and she was like, "No, you're not staying in this." And she moved me
Nice.
over to Brittany Hall near her, and so that we could hang out every day.
It's very
Smart.
helpful.
Circling back, I, as the a team Logan person, I do what I did want to ask. You tell a story about casting Logan and how there were two actors and you advocated for Matt Zuckery. And I was curious, do you remember who the other actor was? Is he anyone of note?
No, but somebody did comment on that they thought that Chris Pratt, is that his name?
Oh, wow. There's so many
That he
Chris's.
was up for. Yeah, but he's like a big movie star now, isn't he? Yeah. That he was up for the part at one point. I don't know. And I said, was he the other guy? And they weren't sure. But that Amy, that they really wanted to get him on the show before he was a movie star. I don't know who the other person would be. So interesting. We need to find them. I should ask Jamie and Mara, the casting people.
Yeah, that'd be
That'd be a good
interesting.
answer to that. I did tell Matt Zuckery, which is in the book. I reminded him. I ran into him years later and it's like, "You are here because of me." He was starring on a new show and he was at the upfront party for it in New York City. And I went because I went in there. Passing and Amy like, "Who are those two cute boys?" And she explained, I go, "Gotta be the blonde one." I was like, if he's any good, that he would look really good with her. And so I kept pushing for that. And everyone's making fun of me. "Oh, you just like blondes." I'm like, "Well, I do, but not exclusively." But it was just a feeling, you get when you just go, I think they would make a good team.
That's why I was curious because I just couldn't imagine it any other way, any other person, you know. So I was like, I wonder who the other guy was, you know, in another universe. Maybe that is the Logan somewhere, but I'm glad it's not ours.
I actually think that'd make a great book of all the famous parts, but and sometimes people post about that. Who were the people that auditioned that didn't get it? And you're like, oh my God, that was the person. I think that'd be fascinating. I to me, the casting process, I love that part of the piece of the puzzle. Especially as a writer and you're going in on a pilot and a pilot that you wrote, because you write it and you I see it. I see it and hear it a certain way. And then the most exciting thing to happen is when an actor comes in that is not anything at all like you had envisioned, and they're brilliant. And then your mind and your eyes suddenly light up, and you can't see it any other way. And so that's why I tell my acting students, just because it might say, a blonde surfer type or whatever, and you're not that, you're in that casting office because somebody saw something in you that they felt could be right for the part. Or maybe they exhausted all the blonde surfer types in Los Angeles and New York. So trust it that you're meant to be in the room for a reason. And then just be yourself. You have to be yourself. And that's a big lesson for actors because they are always thinking, I want to be what they want me to be. No, and as I teach also young high school students that we can't cast you unless we see you. So don't put on something that you think we're going to want. You just have to be you within the lines of the script. And it either will mesh and make sense, or it's just not the right part in the right time. And that's okay.
Yeah. And I feel like sometimes you hear the then we ended up like writing a character for that person or something like that, which is I'm sure very neat and exciting creatively for all parties involved and whatnot.
Amy did that a lot on, Gilmore Girls, where people would come in, they'd audition, and she would no, and she'd have them back, and no, and then if they really love somebody, they would say, "Let's write a part for this person." And we do that all the time. I think she really likes Sherilyn Fenn, so she kept trying to figure out something for her, or to mention someone from Girls, another name drop, Melissa McCarthy. So we were doing our sitcom for Lifetime, Rita Rocks, and I went over to the set of The Backup Plan, which was a J-Lo movie. I'm just going to keep dropping names here and there.
Do it.
And I walked in not knowing that Melissa McCarthy had a small part in that movie of a group, I think it was like a group therapy session of women that were pregnant. And I'm like, oh my God, hi, blah, 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 blah. And then she goes, what are you doing here? And I said, well, I'm just taking a break. We're over on the other side of the lot. And she just says, write me a part. I want a guest star. Like, okay. And this was all before Bridesmaids. And I went back to the writer's room and I said, Melissa McCarthy, you remember Samantha Who? And she was on Gilmore Girls and she's a big groundlings person. Let's write her a part. So we wrote her a part. And so you never know.
Oh, that's so cool. And then to have that actor like blow up either in that part or later on and just be like, yeah, I
Later.
got them.
But the interesting thing is that when she came to do it, she had not done, I don't think, any multicam shows in front of a studio audience. So she still has to come and rehearse every day. And she just wasn't giving it. She was holding back. And all the writers are bitching about her, like, she's not funny. And blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, but she is. She really is. Should we fire her? I'm like, no, she's going to be fine. Well, when it came to the night that we taped it, it was friggin' hysterical. And then we just kept telling her, because she's a great improviser, just say the lines once. Let's get it that filmed. And then go to town and do whatever you want to do. And then we would just be laughing for, half
Gosh.
hour as she would just go off on, and there's a lot of YouTube clips of her, in her films, just ad-libbing and cracking up everybody on set. I would love, 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 love to work with her again. I just think she's, just genius. And there's just something really special about her.
Yeah, completely agreed. That's the kind of thing that wasn't allowed on Gilmore Girls, though, right?
Yeah, I was just
The
thinking.
improvising.
No, you do not improvise. But the one thing I didn't like about Suki is like I kept saying to Amy, we're wasting so much food. Like, who would make all that food? And then we're just throwing it away. Oh, we can't give it to other people. So that was a little pet peeve of mine. But again, it wasn't my show. I could just, have my little comments. but that was part of the fun of Suki, I guess.
Yeah, we love Suki. We're big Suki fans, of course, as everybody is. I
Yes,
don't think anybody
everybody.
is not. I kind of wanted to change gears a little bit and talk about you write, like, as you were working on Gilmore Girls, you at one point pitched a love interest for Michelle, and that was really shot down. And then you also talk about kind of the homophobia you experienced, especially like on the Golden Girls writers' room and set. And I was just wondering what you what it's like to be trying to portray maybe some of your own experiences or reach people who aren't being represented on TV and stuff and have that shot down, or how has that changed over the years to have people with LGBTQ life's experiences, orientations, all of that on screen?
Well, initially when I got to Hollywood, it's a shock to a lot of people. We had to be in the closet and not say we were gay on Golden Girls, a very progressive show. Years later, it would go to, being on Roseanne, and Tom Arnold would be running around the halls going, "Where are my gay guys?" Like, that's pretty bad to say. But it was wonderful to be open and finally being able to just go to work and be who you are and let that out. Unfortunately, there's still so much homophobia, and especially now there's so much transphobia. Really so sickening to me. Just, and it's hard to even explain it to people now. If it's not bothering you, why do you care? Why do you care? Why can't people just be who they are? Like, whatever they want to be, however they want to dress, what doesn't matter? So it now it's really seems just so silly, but the fight is still on, and there's still so much ageism, which goes to the project that we tried to do as a TV series called Silver Foxes, which is kind of a gay men's Golden Girls, and nobody would make it because it was old characters and it was gay characters, and I could
Oh
yell
gosh.
from here to eternity about Golden Girls and still being popular, but live in fear. So unfortunately, as much fighting and marching that I've done in my life, we still have to keep doing it. And when, stories like about necks in the bathroom, and that really touched me because I was afraid to go to the bathroom between 7th and 9th grade
I thought of
because of
that.
the fear that that would happen to me. So there's always been hate. It just feels like in the past few years, it's been amplified in a way that it's okay. And when you have politicians saying, calling LGBTQ plus people like filth or trash, or it so makes it so others us, well, no wonder someone could take a child's head and beat it against a floor, because they're not humans, they're filth or trash. So what's the big deal?
Yeah, it's
And as I
heartbreaking.
posted the other day, not thinking it would totally explode on about words are powerful, and as a writer, I know that. So to have government officials talking like that, and school officials, it's just, I'm done with it. Like, we have just got to stand up and say no more. You cannot, people. It's scary enough to go to school anyway as a kid, wanting to be popular, but to have that on it, I don't want any kid to have gone through what I went through, and to have so many years of feeling ugly and unworthy and not good enough and not equal to other people. Like, we're all the same. We all want to be happy, and we all have beating hearts. How'd you get me on that soapbox? That's a
Well,
lot.
that was we try to be super vocal as we're like recapping the show and stuff about how we have a whole bunch of headcanons of different townsfolk and stuff in Stars Hollow who are queer in some way, and we have like on our Instagram we've posted some of those, just trying to bring in like, just because these shows didn't include certain experiences doesn't mean we can't read those experiences into them and feel comfort in it. And I was also thinking of just how like how Gilmore Girls and Golden Girls, as you talk about, have become the kind of like shows for queer communities. People are really into them, even though they're not represented. And it's just amazing to see that in some of the shows, even though as they were being written and stuff, the experiences are different.
I think what you spoke about earlier, found families. I think that's something that people in those communities can relate to, that because you're often ostracized from the general public or even your own family, I can understand that, that you have to find of like people or allies, and they become your family. And I think that was very much a part of what Golden Girls was, and it's very much a part of what Stars Hollow is. Those are found family of people that, again, like we were talking about, have your back and will love you no matter what, which is what family should be. But oftentimes they're not, and especially in these days where there's so much polarization politically, that there is definitely one party out there that is just spewing hate. And awful things, or people that look different, or people that want to come to this country for a better life. The gall of and the privilege that I hear is just shocking to me. How do you have the right when you don't even are not native to this land, and then for you to just shut the door behind you? Nope. And it was so interesting. There was an article in the New York Times the other day saying that really helping us get through COVID and work supply, where a lot of immigrants coming to our country and filling those jobs, and why that wasn't made a bigger deal of. So stop saying, yes, there has to be a pathway to get in and, everything. And people shouldn't have to go through horrible excursions to get here, or through water where there's wires that could kill you. So again, these are people, and so that's why in my work of late, I've been wanting to marry art and advocacy together. That's why I did and it's still doing the Diary of Anne Frank, with mostly cast with Latinx actors, which Aris Alvarado, who plays Caesar, has been a part of, and he is fantastic, and we love him dearly. And
Wonderful.
all the cast members from the show that have come and supported us at the play has been really great. So it's wonderful. And I've gotten to do a lot of plays with Vanessa Morano, and I did a reading with Renee Bell. I did my suicide note awareness play with Virginia Madsen and cast members from Gilmore Girls, and that was super cool.
Oh, great. That's wonderful. That's like there are so many, I feel like so many people in Hollywood are kind of disconnected from some of the things that are going on, but it's great to hear that you're bringing art and advocacy together to
For
raise
me,
awareness and
thank you. For me, it's very frustrating to watch the news these days. So to find a way to use my craft for good, it makes me feel less hopeless and actually hopeful to go into different communities with these plays and provoke conversation. And I think that's very important.
Yeah, agree 100%.
All right. I think this brings us close to the end, wrapping
Okay.
things up and whatnot.
And whatnot.
Yeah, and whatnot. I guess we can ask, you've alluded a bit to your plays and advocacy, the things that you're working on right now, and where our listeners can find you and support you and things like that.
They can follow me on Instagram, Zimmerman Stan. They can buy my book, The Girls from Golden to Gilmore, and
So
stories
pretty.
about all the wonderful women I've worked with, and Roseanne. It's a really a love to all these wonderful women, but especially to my mother, whose birthday was a few days ago. And she made me who I am today, and I will always be forever grateful. But to all of the women that I've had the famous names and people you may never have heard of that have, the friends that have stuck with me forever, and even the new people I've met, like the two of you.
Thank you.
So follow me. You'll see I have a website under the same Zimmerman Stan, which will have different places where I'm appearing, or book signing events in different parts of the country, or going to openings of my plays, or performing in my play. So I've been doing the suicide play right before I go all over the country. I just did it in last month, and hopefully doing it somewhere near you.
Wonderful. Have to
Thank you
look
for
out for that.
inviting
That'd be
me on your
great.
show.
Yeah, thank
Yeah,
you so
thank you for,
much.
yeah, this was a lot of fun just to hear the process that you go through and what it was like working on these shows. It's been really great to hear from you. So thank you for joining us.
Well, hopefully I can see you two in person at the
Yeah.
FanFest Society this
Yeah.
October in Connecticut. It's going to be beautiful. The leaves will be falling and you will not regret a moment of it, and you'll make friends for life.
Sounds
Yeah, we got
good.
to prioritize
Okay.
Thank
Bye. Bye.
you.
Thanks for listening to Talking Fast, a Gilmore Girls podcast.
Don't forget to rate and review us and share us with your friends. Join us on Instagram and TikTok at Talking Fast Podcast.
And join the conversation by emailing us your thoughts, talkingfastpodcast@gmail.com.